I am coming to my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I've eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I've drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink, yea, drink abundantly, O beloved. I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. For my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night. I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them? My beloved put in his hands by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with sweet smell and myrrh upon the handles of the lock. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone, for my soul failed when he spake. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. The watchmen that went about the city found me. They smote me, they wounded me. The keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that ye tell him that I am sick of love. What is thy beloved more than another beloved, O thou fairest among women? What is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou dost so charge us? And here's the answer. My beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. His head is as the most fine gold. His locks are bushy and black as a raven. His eyes are as the eyes of doves by the rivers of water, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are as a bed of spices, as sweet flowers, his lips like lilies, dropping sweet-smelling myrrh. His hands are as gold rings set with the beryl. His belly is as bright ivory overlaid with sapphires. His legs are as pillars of marble set upon sockets of fine gold. His countenance is as Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. This week, I ran across this first slide, and I got my wife to read it, and I said, this is me, isn't it, dear? And she says, yes, it is, dear. Or this is her for me. Wedding vows should include, do you promise to always help him find his stuff that is right in front of him, because you will be doing that forever. And I must admit, sadly, my wife does a man look for things, as my wife says, and she helps me find things. This week is marriage week. It started today, and it is an emphasis on marriage, and I realize you don't find the word marriage week in the Bible, not there. But it's a great opportunity for us to emphasize the importance of marriage and the husband and wife and the part that they are in society, the importance that moms and dads and husbands and wives have in society. This is my beloved. This is my friend. And that is taken from, his mouth is most sweet, yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. And so we take the verse, or we take the title of the message from that. And really, what I want to do today is, among all the other things that they called each other, they had all kind of different names that they referred to each other by. They also referred to each other as my beloved and my friend. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning, is the fact of my beloved and my friend. And this message may be helpful for you if you are married. You one day hope to be married, or will to be married. You have friends. You one day hope to have friends. And you want to be friendly. All right, so in no way is this message just for husbands and wives. There's just too much in it because we're talking about too many things. First thing I want us to look at is in my relationship with my beloved. And by the way, when a word is used so many times in a book, you go ding, 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 that's there for a purpose. And the word beloved is used 32 times in this book. So they're writing to their beloved. And the first thing I want you to notice about this is in my relationship with my beloved, I should value my marriage, my wife, my husband, as something rare and valuable. I should value my marriage, my husband, my wife, as something that is rare. And the reason I say that is because in Song of Solomon 4:11, thy lips, O my spouse, drop as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue, and the smell of thy garments is like the smell of Lebanon. He talks about honeycomb and honey, and then in verse 16 of our text, it says, his mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. Now, when we talk about being sweet, you know, that just comes, it's just no big deal to us, is it? But you know what? What do these things? And you're not getting any. These are mine. Okay. Let's just get that down. Okay. Okay. Now, I must admit, these all have chocolate. That tells you a little bit about me. But they all have chocolate in common. But the thing that they have in common that we take for granted today is that they are all filled with sugar. In fact, when you're cooking from scratch and it calls for a cup of sugar, what do you do? Just go get a cup of sugar. But back then, when this was written, the only sugars were what? Things that were naturally sweet. Honey, some fruit, some smells from different herbs or plants or those kind of things. And so when they talk about their husband or their wife as being sweet, they're saying, you know what? I value. Man, this is something you don't get every day. This is absolutely special. And really, is that the way that we see our husbands or our wives? Do we see, for you guys that are married, do you see your husband or your wife as being rare, as being special, as being valuable? Do you look at them as a ball and chain, or do you look at them as what they are, as valuable? You mean that person that drives me crazy sometimes? They are valuable. Writers in Solomon say, you know what, my husband, my wife, they're just as valuable as chocolate. They're just as valuable as sugar. And I know in today's society, what? Marriage is looked on with contempt. I think I'll live with someone, people say, I think I'll live with someone for 7 years. If things are still going okay, I'll think about getting married. It's like it's the last, worst, most terrible thing you can do. When you look in Scripture, you see that marriage, that to that person whom you have chosen, whom the Lord has given you, that person is valuable. So when we see our husband and our wife, do we let them know that we think they're special? that we think they're valuable. They, time and time again, you look up these verses, you look up those verses that I had for you, man, they're just full of times where they spoke, this is good stuff. This is very valuable. Second thing I want you to notice is about our beloved is that I should be committed to him or her exclusively and forsaking all others. That I as a husband, I as a wife, should be committed to my wife or husband exclusively, forsaking all others. And actually, we say that during most weddings. We get the husband and the wife to both say that. We're forsaking all others and only she's mine. He's mine. They're what I'm about now. Song of Solomon 2:16 says, my beloved is mine and I am his. He feedeth among the lilies. And it's not that they're always together. He's doing other things. Says, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He feedeth among the lilies. So twice the Song of Solomon tells us that they belong one to another. I have come into my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink. Yes, drink abundantly. It's not that we don't have other friends. It's not that we don't have other friends. He says, you know, you guys are welcome to come and have fellowship times with us, but then wait. She is my friend. This is my beloved. This is my friend. I have one friend. Lots of friends, but one best friend. Someone said the forsaking others part has most to do with preserving the physical oneness and in turn the emotional and spiritual safety sexual monogamy helps ensure. So yes, it means that you're faithful to your wife, forsaking all others. You're faithful to your husband, forsaking all others. It does not mean that if I'm walking down the road, I've known of friends that they had to look down when they passed another person of the opposite sex because husband or wife was going to give them grief when they got home because you may have looked at that person. It does talk about the fact of sexually pure, just being with that one person, but the forsaking others part has most to do with preserving. Okay. What this vow really does is emphasize the first and most important principle for a successful marriage, that each person places their spouse and by extension the marriage itself above all other earthly relationships. This means your marriage comes before your parents, your siblings, the old buddies from the day, and all the hobbies that make you the individual you are. You are no longer operating solely as an individual. It comes before the kids. It comes before the job. I am committed to him or her exclusively and forsaking all others. And I know, if you read Song of Solomon, there's times when he's working. In fact, I've known of people. The husband has quit his job so he can be with his wife. That doesn't make sense. You got to have money to pay the bills. Doesn't mean you're always and only for them, but it means they're your number one priority. Next, I should spend time with my beloved. From these verses, we find that I should spend time with my beloved. The voice of my beloved, behold, he cometh leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved spake and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Let me ask you something. Do you enjoy being with your husband, being with your wife? Do you enjoy spending time settling down and just quiet time together? And sometimes I realize that that means a lot of times looking after the kids or doing other things as a husband, wife. But do you spend time with them? She says, you know what, my husband, don't look for me to come skipping, okay? Skipping or jumping like this guy. But you know what? To spend time with your wife, to spend time with your husband, very valuable. Very valuable. In fact, he says, I am my beloved, and his desire is toward me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let's spend time together. Do you want to? Do you endeavor to have a cup of coffee with your wife? Do you endeavor to help with the laundry or do other things around the house with your wife? Do you endeavor to help in the yard or go shopping or some of those things, whatever that you can do, and I realize we can't always be together. Do we spend time with them? Is our desire toward them? Do you want to be around your husband? Do you want to be around him? I had a friend that wrote a song one time. It was terrible. She said something like this. She says, I walk in from work, the front door, and my husband walks out the back door. Is that our attitude toward our husband, our wife? And can I say that if you find yourself with that attitude, I'm not saying beat yourself, but pull yourself up and say, no. You have your heart go toward them. You desire them. They are your beloved. Sometimes you got to pull yourself up. Sometimes you got to say, no, this is my wife. This is my husband. This is the one that I'm supposed to love. Because sometimes we get in that love affair of loving self. And so we need to spend time with them. The writers here in Solomon, they love spending time with each other. I should show appreciation for my spouse through words, touch, and actions. I should show appreciation for my spouse through words, touch, and actions. And we know what the Song of Solomon is, and we could go to certain verses that are very explicit in the appreciation of one another. But notice what he says in 1:16. Behold, thou art fair, my beloved, yea, pleasant. Also, our bed is green. You know what? I'm attracted to you. You're good looking. You're beautiful. You ever tell your husband or your wife, thank you for being you? You got beautiful eyes. Man, you look nice today. Thank you for cooking tea. Thank you for mowing the yard. Thanks for getting the mail. What are these? These are compliments. These are ways of saying thank you. It's ways of expressing appreciation. Do we do that? Do we say, you know what? You're cool. I'm good with you. And you know what? You may say, you know, I don't do those things. Well, what do you do? You don't have to do what I do. How do you show appreciation? Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. Now, that's nice. Within thy loves. I don't like doves, do I? Got doves on our house. I'm not happy with doves right now. Or no, those are pigeons. I'm sorry. Thy hair is as flock of goats. Now, I reckon a book would come flying at me if I told my wife, honey, your hair is as a flock of goats. Whoosh. You know, it has to be appropriate. Has to fit us. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. And you know, I'm all for not overly showing affection. And some needs to be no one else sees. I really believe that too. But you know what? For the kids to see, a hand being held, or the hand on the shoulder, round the waist, kiss on the cheek, mouth. You know what? They gonna go what? They're gonna go, ugh, grody, ugh, yeah, ugh, ugh. But there's something about it that says, you know what? That's all right. Mom and Dad love each other. There's something comforting about it too. And then his mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. In my relationship with my friends, so we've looked at appreciating our spouse as our beloved. Secondly, I want us to look at this morning appreciating our spouse as our friend. And I guess my first question is this. Should your spouse be your best friend? Should your spouse be your best friend? And you know what? If you go home and you Google that, you're going to get 1,603,742, that's probably not exactly right, but opinions. A lot of them are going to say, no, your husband, your wife, they should never, ever, ever, ever be your best friend. Some are going to say, yeah, they should be. So, let's just have a look at some verses. First of all, in chapter 5, verse 1, we read, she invites others to come and enjoy time with them. Say, friends, come on and come and drink and enjoy the time with me and my hubby. Friends, come. So they have other friends. But then she says what in verse 16? She says, this is my beloved. This is my, and I'm putting it in there. And you can say this. You can say, Pastor, you put that in there. This is my best friend. Okay, I've got lots of friends, but this is my friend. This is my friend. Yeah, I have other friends for sure. First thing I want you to notice is the choice of my friend. Can I ask you that if you are a believer this morning and you want to get married one day, that you are careful that you only seek to date people that are Christians? Because part of it is finding someone that's going the same way. So the same way as you. And it's not that they're necessarily just like you, because if you look at it throughout this, she says, you know what, my husband, he's a king. I didn't come from that background. I'm not royal or anything. We come from totally different backgrounds. But they had that connection. They had that connection that had them going the same way. So whomever you choose to marry, they need to be someone going the same way, not exactly the same as you, but going the same way, and knowing the Lord is a part of that. And really, we can have lots of friends, but really, they made the choice. They, you know, this is the friend that I want to be my beloved. This is the one I'm committing to. One writer said this: do we choose our mates? 'Tis true. I often say that Beck and I were dating for such and such a time, and she asked me to marry her. That's not totally true. I just kid with that. I eventually asked her to marry me. You know what? We chose one another. No one had a gun, I hope, to her head saying, you better marry him. We chose. You know what? These folks in the Song of Solomon, they chose one another. But notice what one writer said. But in friendship, even that between husband and wife, we think we have chosen our peers. In reality, a few years difference in the dates of our births, a few more miles between certain houses, the choice of one university instead of another. I'll throw in the choice of one church instead of another, posting to different regiments, the accident of a topic being raised or not raised at the first meeting. Any of these chances might have kept us apart. But for a Christian, there are, strictly speaking, no chances. A secret master of the ceremonies has been at work. Christ, who said to the disciples, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you," can truly say to every group of Christian friends, including their spouse, "You have not chosen one another, but I have chosen you for one another." The friendship is not a reward for our discrimination and good taste in finding one another out. It's the instrument by which God reveals to each the beauties of all the others. You know what? I know it gets hard sometimes in marriage, but marriage is not about our comfort. It's not about our comfort. It's not all about us. In fact, lots of times that's what people look at it as. It's all about me. When actually, the Lord gave you that man, the Lord gave you that woman, and their strengths and their shortcomings to help you find your all in all in Him. So that we will trust Him more. That we will look to Him when people get on our nerves like we get on. The Lord is so patient with us. You think you're patient with your wife. You think you're patient with your husband. The Lord's just teaching you. Well, come be like me. I'm patient with everybody. So the Lord, yes, we've chosen our mate, and really, you ought to choose carefully. But in the long run, the Lord is involved. Notice quickly the constancy of friendship. The constancy of friendship. You know, when you're a kid, you remember being back then? I hope it's not like this for you today. When you was in grade 1 or 2, friend said something, "I'm not going to be your friend anymore." March off, next day, friends again. You know, nothing ever happened. All forgotten, all good. You know what? Sometimes friends are really not constant. In fact, Toy Story, you got a friend in me. You've got troubles, I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, we can see it through because you got a friend in me. I hope you, well, you don't have to sing that to your husband or your wife, but I hope that's your underlying theme because we do. Sometimes friends go away. Wealth makes many friends. And sometimes people are friends because they are what they can do for you or what we can do for them. And you know, when I say that sometimes people will have you as their friends for what you can do for them, some of us would say, "Oh, really? Never." When actually, we're probably the same way. We look to others for what they can do for us. And that's why, in some ways, they're our friends. You look at the rich, they were willing to be the friends of the rich until when? Until the money runs out. When the money run out, nah, not going to be. Notice, wealth makes many friends, but the poor is separated from his neighbor. Guess what that word neighbor is? It's the same word as friend. You can put the word friend there. It is the same word. The poor, they don't have friends. Why? Well, many will entreat the favor of the prince, and every man is a friend to him that giveth gifts. Why? Because he gives gifts. All the brethren of the poor do hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? Sometimes we can have friends that aren't there, that aren't constant, that aren't regular. But there is that friend. It says, a man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. There are friends that when things start going away from you, or when things start going bad, they go away. But he says there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. Now, you know what? A brother, and I realize it's not, sadly, it's not always like this. Back in those days, family was really big or very important. And when a sibling or a son or a daughter were going through something, family would be around. Brother, if brother needed help or sister needed help, they were going to be there, whether they really liked them or not. It says here that there's a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. You know what that word sticketh gives the idea of? Being glued to. They stick to you. No matter if you're really down, guess where they are too? They're really down with you. It's not that they're struggling like you are. It's just they're trying to help you up. And if you are really struggling and pressed in a corner, guess who's in the corner with you? Wherever you are, they're going to. They're just there. They're there because they have interest in you. And guess what? That's the way the Lord wants a husband and a wife to be. That where they are, there's the other one. And really, as friends, we can learn from this how important it is that we just be there for others. That we just be there for others. It says here, the constancy of friends, but you see the people who only know you because the chips are down and you're starting to collapse, and when it's going to take a lot of involvement and expenditure to stay in a close relationship to you as your life is collapsing, that's when your companions say, call me if you need anything. But a friend is there because a friend is deliberately has made you not a means to an end, but an end in yourself. A friend goes to the mat. A friend says, I will do whatever it takes to keep you from falling into ruin. I won't let you get to the bottom. I won't. I'll be there even when it costs me something. Husbands, wives, are you friend to your husband, to your wife? If they're going through a difficult time, are you there with them? Are you right there beside them? We can learn about, and we look at this stuff and we say, you know what, man, I'd love to have friends like this. And that's what one writer said. He said, the writer of The Four Loves, he said, you know what? C.S. Lewis, he said, you know what, we're jealous of this. Because so few of us have real affectionate friends. Or it crushes us to know that, you know what, we haven't been that kind of friend. And so the constancy of friendship. And then the care of friendship. We're almost done. The care of friendship. A friend loves at all times. A brother is born for adversity. Okay, so the brother, according to Old Testament times and New Testament times, family was important. They were going to be there whether they liked you or not. They were going to support you. But a friend is going to be there. But notice some people don't have care. They can see that you've been up all night working. They can see that you were with the kids all night. You were up all night They know. They come over early in the morning. I'm getting ready to be loud, okay, just warning you. They come over very early in the morning and they say, "Good morning! Good to see you! How are you today? What a wonderful day! Isn't this great?" And here you are going, "I've been up all night. You're getting on my nerves." They're not sensitive. They're not sensitive. They're just living their own lives. They don't have the ability to feel for the guy that's been up. They don't have the ability to come beside and get in his shoes and say, "You know what? What would I feel? Would I want somebody to yell at me if I had been up all night?" They don't have the sensitivity. Proverbs 25:20. "Is he that taketh away a garment in cold weather and is vinegar upon night, or so is he that singeth songs to a heavy heart." Can you imagine somebody taking somebody's coat? It's really cold, not like here. It's really cold, and instead of giving them a coat, they take the coat away. That doesn't help. Can you imagine somebody that's going through heartbreaking circumstances who is just double over with problems and difficult, and their heart is just broken, and a so-called friend sees them and they see they're down and they start singing, "Sing with me. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, sing. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands." How insensitive. Really? You're wanting me to sing and clap? Just insensitive. What about the joke that goes too far? "As a madman who casteth firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man that deceiveth his neighbor." That's the word, his neighbor, his friend, "and saith, am not I in sport?" I'm just kidding. Yeah, I really said a lot of hurtful things there, but I was just kidding. And then the council of friendship. Notice, I love this verse. Do you love this verse? It says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, kisses of an enemy." Faithful, wounds, kisses, enemy. It seems to be going the right way, but it isn't. And you know, there's people that will come beside you and they will know that you need to change your ways, but they won't change theirs. Or they won't say, "Hey, you know what? Do you realize you're going the wrong way?" Husbands, wives. Back up just for a second. I'm too big of a hurry. Can we just take a minute or two? Are we showing care for our friends? Are we willing to get down beside our husband or wife or our friends who are down? Are we willing to get beside of them? Are we willing to... And yeah, it's have to get our knees dirty. It's going to be time. But are we willing to? The counsel of friendship. "Faithful are the wounds of a friend." You know what? Sometimes we need that counsel. Hey, you know what? You thought about your relationship with the Lord lately? Seems like you're drifting away from the Lord. You know, as a husband and wife, we ought to have that investment in the other. Do we have that kind of investment in our friends too? It's not that I saw you using your phone during church today. I bet you were looking up the weather or NRL. It's not that we're accusatory. It's more of, you know what? I've been noticing steady progression. You seem to be going away from the Lord. Is everything okay? And you know what? Just taking interest. "Faithful are the wounds of a friend." You know, sometimes you just need to be wounded. Sometimes we need to have that... not physical abuse, okay? I'm not okay for that. I'm not saying that's right. Sometimes we need that wake-up call by our husband, by our wife. Just gently, you know what? Is your relationship right? Are we going the right way here? And then the comfort, ointment, and perfume. You know, there's those times where we just need someone to come around and say, you know what? I'm with you. I'm with you. I had folks to do that when I lost my mom. They just said, you know what? I'm with you. I'm with you. And you know, just that comfort to know that others are beside us. It helps prop. It helps. So that comfort to know that husband or wife is there, it helps. If they don't always agree with you, when God brought Eve to Adam, they matched in a lot of ways, but not every way. You know what? A woman sees things different than a man. A man sees things different than a woman. There's more than just physical differences. There's those different ways of looking at life. And the iron sharpeneth iron. You know, just the different perspectives coming in and attacking the same problem. Well, I hadn't thought of it that way. I hadn't thought of it that way. Let's tweak what we were going to do and do it this way. And then, lastly, the connection. The connection of friendship. And this is really what I wanted to end with, and this is what I'm going to end with. The connection of friendship. You know what? Sometimes husbands and wives, they start off all close together with the beloved. They start off all close together as the beloved. And somehow, they're good with the beloved part, but the friendship wanes. Instead of being connected together over the years, they drift apart. They don't have those things that keep them together, that draws them together. Well, you know what? Our relationship with the Lord is one thing that always draws us together. In fact, that draws us together as different as we all are. Christ draws us together. And as a husband and wife, there is that connection. You know what? As you grow as a husband, as you grow as a wife, you be sure your wife or your husband's going with you. Don't grow apart. Don't grow apart. Grow together. Grow together.